Hello.
Oh, you want to do the intro this time?
Yes, what do we say?
Welcome to Cold Email with Basha and Olive. Episode 6, Zine to USD Exchange Rate.
Hello, welcome to Cold Email. I'm Olive.
And I'm Basha.
And this week we're going to talk to you about the Zine to USD Exchange Rate.
It's true. Do you think it's high? I don't know if that's like the right question to ask. Do you think a zine is more valuable than a dollar?
Most of them cost like $20.
It's so true.
I'm going to say it's a pretty high exchange rate. Or is that, that's a high exchange rate, right?
I probably should have had an understanding of better understanding of exchange rates before I asked this question.
I'll ask you a question then. What is a zine?
Oh, well, a zine is typically a self-published book and often takes advantage of experimental subject matter, book forms, and or printing techniques. It's frequently a single subject, exploration, or collection, which I think is... I gotta say, a little the opposite of what they've become.
Yeah.
Like, for a zine to be, like, $30.
Yeah, it's like, that's not what it's supposed to be at that point. It's like, it's taking the zine so far, like, very far out of its traditional context, which is to be, like, yeah. Especially, like, a piece of printed matter that is supposed to be, like, cheap or free. To be right. able to easily distribute it as widely as you can, from right. what I understand about the history of zines.
No, I'm with you. It seems like a zine is supposed to be super accessible, and I think my problem yeah. with a lot of zines are that they're not.
It's become very exclusive.
It's become an art book.
Yeah, it is an art book.
Forget zine to US dollar pipeline, zine to US dollar exchange rate. It's the zine to art book pipeline.
Yeah, it is. It's a sliding scale these days.
I think you meant a slippery slope.
See, I'm like, yes, the slippery slope is the, zines becoming art books, but I think the sliding scale is like, because there are still some out there that are like cheap and like easily distributable. Mm. And then there's things like comics, which is like, okay, you get an 8-page zine, it's like $5, which is like, it costs something. It's going a little bit out of the traditional context, but it's not like a big production. And then you have like the big production ones that are
mm-hmm.
essentially art books. So yes to both.
I think there's a lot of blurring of lines now, for better yeah. or for worse.
Yeah.
Okay, so something I struggle with, keeping that definition in mind, is what is a zine in 2021? Because maybe I didn't put it in the definition that I wrote, but I think a lot of it is about distribution and community and collaboration. So what is a zine when we don't have a physical community? Does the spirit of the zine transcend its traditional form?
I think it's, like, at that point, because it's, like, there's two parts to the zine, you know? It's the making of it, and it's the distribution of it. And I think a lot of them have shifted towards an emphasis on the making of it, in, like, the printing technique in the book forms, rather than the distribution in, like, the community-forming aspect of it.
Right, that would also explain the increased prices.
Yeah, because I'm just, like, thinking of, like, Art Book Fair and all, like, the different...
Yeah.
Some of them are just, like, actual books. They're, like, spiral-bound, they have fold-outs, and they're... Some of them are really beautiful things, but it's, like, at what point does it stop being a zine?
Right. Do we have to be so strict with it? Is it just anything you want?
I don't think so. I think it's anything you want. It just, like, it kind of makes me sad to see it be inaccessible.
There's a lot of inaccessibility in not the traditional zine, but the Brooklyn zine art world situation.
Yeah, because it's like a ever-expanding community, but also, like, a very gatekeepy one. So it's, like, all these art forms are growing, but, like, people are making them for, like, the very specific audience.
Yeah. Well, while I will say that I've definitely felt gate-kept at times, I'm gonna cut everyone a little slack here, because I'm trying to be more understanding of people in the year 2021. I think a lot of it is probably that there's just so many people and you kind of hold dearly and tightly onto your community to try to make a name for yourself and your friends, just because it's so hard to make it. You're a small fish. It's a big pond.
Yeah, because of the rapidly expanding pond, you're like, ah, my friends. And it's like, who wouldn't, you know, I'd do that too.
Yeah, for sure. I really do wonder what it's going to be like post-everything. If you're listening in the future, I mean post-COVID pandemic. Which, if you're listening in the future, congrats to us, we made it.
I feel like after it's, like, over, I would hope there's going to be, like, more community and more, like, acknowledging of each other as, like, all members of, like, an artist community. Like, I hope people will be more excited to, like, go to art book fairs and, like, say hi to people and, like, be talking and, you know, share art and share work and share experiences with other people. I hope that it, like, it takes that turn because of this prolonged period of isolation.
I can't help but hope so, too, and think so. And I also wonder what the effect of, like, a lot of, I mean, we don't totally understand the demographic shift, right, out of New York City. We have, like, no idea really who's leaving aside from essays on LinkedIn.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, like, you think that a lot of people moved out, but, like, maybe it was just the venture capitalists, or maybe it was artists who went back home. Yeah, I feel like there are two schools of thought there here. Which is, for a person in, like, our shoes, as, like, someone trying to make it in the Brooklyn world, you're like, dang, I kind of wish the pond was a little smaller, the rent was a little cheaper, and this kind of thing was a little harder to come by, so I would be the one who did it here. Like, kind of how it is in a small town. And then I think, on the other hand, hand B, you're here because it's a center of art, design, culture, etc., and it would be a little less rich if people left.
Yeah, it's like the amount of people in all, like, those different experiences make it what it is. If it was a small town, it would be a small town. There wouldn't be that many people, not as many experiences. It wouldn't be the same.
I think the best of both worlds here would be that if the rich people left, vacated some storefronts, which I think did happen, and then commercial rents went down, which I think is happening, if not has already happened. Yeah, it's like a weird moment, but I kind of am hoping that more independently owned stores, venues, etc., are able to open.
Yeah, I hope so.
Restaurants.
Too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Love that.
Yeah, that's my most optimistic take that I really hope does happen.
Yeah, I think it's got a pretty good chance, you know.
Yeah.
Part 2, the interview with Greg Kletzel.
Greg Kletzel is an illustrator based in Atlanta, Georgia. He's an obsessive drawer and keeper of sketchbooks, a teacher at Pratt Institute, and creator of an animated short for Nickelodeon called Farkles. His favorite place is Denny's, Florida. Select clients include The New York Times, The New Yorker, Adult Swim, ESPN Magazine, Harvard Business Review, Etsy, BuzzFeed, The Baffler, Sports Illustrated Kids, and AT&T. Honors include Society of Illustrators Annual, MoCA Award of Excellence, American Illustration Annual, Communication Arts Illustration Annual, and Society of Illustrators Comics and Cartoon Annual.
In a drawn interview, when asked any last words, advice, warnings, he responded, Tell them to do and make as many things as possible and not to overanalyze everything and not care whether it's good or bad. And try not to understand who they are and what they're doing, because what matters at the end, but during is what counts, and doing is what probably matters.
Wow, that's so good.
I actually met Greg before taking his class, I think at Comic Arts Brooklyn, when I bought his zine conceptual bar mitzvah video, which definitely changed me a little. It made me understand that someone who was very different from me, for example, Greg's bar mitzvah was in 1997, and I was born in 1997, could have such similar experiences and a similar worldview as me. It also changed my understanding of comics and visual storytelling as something that could be casual and fun versus highly structured and labored. You know, like Marvel comics, which are cool. For people, not my cup of tea.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a fan either.
Yeah, but... I was like, if this is what comics is, ooh, that's not my thing. I see why people like it, but it's just not for me. But I feel like Greg's work, I kind of encountered it right at the beginning of school, maybe sophomore year or something, and I was like, wait a second, if it's like this, I do want in.
Yeah.
Also, Greg has a super, super great YouTube channel.
He does.
He is a master pep talker, and he has such useful tips for making work.
That he does.
He's a zine master, a Rezo guy, a sketchbook king.
You can't see, but I'm nodding right now in agreement.
Yeah, he's great. I'm glad we record these in advance so Greg doesn't have to, on the call, hear me being like...
The conceptual bar mitzvah guy.
I wanted to hang out with the conceptual bar mitzvah guy.
I'm sure you would get a laugh out of that, though. It's cool.
Well, I hope you're laughing when you hear this, Greg. All right.
Okay. Says recording for everyone?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, yep. Cool. Yay, we're here with Greg.
Hey.
Hey. So we recorded...
Thank you for having me on your show.
Oh, yeah. Such a pleasure. We recorded a super nice intro, like maybe too nice. Oh. We're like, Greg's the best. Greg's amazing. He's the king of sketchbooks. So you'll hear that when you...
Thank you.
Won't say it now. I'm too embarrassed. Nice. Yeah. But yeah, we're here with Greg.
Hello.
Hey. And before we hit record, we were actually talking a little about the pandemic affecting freelance. And Greg was about to hop in with a really good...
Yeah. I mean, it's unprecedented that it's just interrupted everything for everyone, and not just people starting out in their career, just it affected everything. So, but it does remind me of a little bit about the 2008 recession. Like, I know that when that hit, like I graduated in 2006. So I had just started working, and then I moved to New York in 2008, like 6 months before the recession. So like everyone started getting fired, and like, you know, the sky was falling. It was like panic. And yeah, I just remember that that time period changed a lot of people's plans. Like I knew that I was like focused on wanting something stable, you know, because everything was like in free fall. So I got a job like a month before I think the stock market started crashing, and I just held on to that job, and all these people started getting fired around me. And for whatever reason, I just was able to like stay in. And so it was like, you're just trying to like, I don't know, stabilize rather than think about what's happening with your career. You know, like it's really, it's a weird time. So yeah, just try to get through it. And then once everything settles down and gets back to normal, then you can start to think of like, you know, your career progression and trajectory and all that.
Yeah. I think it's so easy to put a ton of pressure on yourself. Like Olive and I have.
Absolutely.
To each other. Like,
yeah.
It's hard when you don't have kind of something to check against. Like,
right.
You don't have like 10 years of working to then be like, I've been successful at this before and I'll be successful at this again. It just kind of feels like...
It's like an unknown. It's like, I don't know what it feels like to, like, you know, have my career on a track.
Right.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Or like when you do the average of something, like the average of 1 and 2 is pretty close to 1 and 2, but like 1 and 17 is really far from 1 and 17.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a hard time to like extrapolate anything about, you know, like the future. It's just like, because everything just, it was like we veered off track so hard. And now it's like we are all waiting to see what the like return looks like. I think we're all just in that zone of like riding it out. And, you know, I'm in it too. And, you know, I think the best thing that you can do at this time is just try to be productive with your, you know, keep your ideas and projects, like self-generated work and personal projects, going in the slow times. And then, you know, still trying to like get some jobs here and there to put together a year. You know, it's tough when you're freelancing because everything can change. Every year is different, you know? So some years are better than others for sure.
Would you say it's important to do self-guided work such as zines?
Yeah, I would. So when
Can I hop in for a sec?
Yeah, sure.
Do you want to just in a few sentences explain what a zine is / in that definition, what a zine is to you?
Sure.
If there's any difference there.
Yeah. So a zine is like a little handmade book. It's self-published typically, usually, and done pretty cheaply or as cheap as you can do it. It's meant to be pretty accessible. It's limited run. So anywhere from, you know, a few dozen copies to usually under 1,000 copies. Because they're self-published and they're just like books that anyone can make, they can be about anything. So you can, if you write poetry, you can make a little poetry zine. If you are interested in cooking, you can do your like grandmother's recipes, you know, like as a zine. For me, zines were a way to develop my illustration portfolio. I came from a background as a graphic designer and I kept a sketchbook throughout all of the time that I was working as a designer. Just getting things out of my sketchbook and into some kind of format that I could give to people, especially once I started going to zine festivals and comic shows like Mocha Fest and Comic Arts Brooklyn in New York. I just started making these like 20-page little books of my sketchbook drawings. And it felt really empowering to make something myself, give it to people, share my work with people, because the sketchbook was something that was so personal. And this was like in the early days before Instagram, and like I had a Flickr account and my Flickr had my drawings on it. And that was really like the way that you could share your drawings, or you could have like a blog, I guess. Tumblr was just starting. So yeah, it was like a way for me to get my work out there and also, you know, see what I wanted to like put in front of people. Like the act of making a zine was informative to me, because suddenly one, like in your sketchbook, I love everything in my sketchbook, but then when you're forced to like actually compile it into a book, you start to like understand what it is you make, like what is your favorite stuff. And the other reason why I liked to make zines was I liked collecting them. I liked that world. When I went to those shows, I just like immediately fell in love with that entire thing of like that world of art prints and illustration. And that was like my connection to illustration. And I just knew that I needed to be a part of it and I wanted to table. So I just started to think like, how does my work live as a zine? And it helped me develop my illustration style and, you know, it helped me get my first jobs as an illustrator as well. So that's why I love them. I keep making them and I tell everyone to make them because it's fun. It's cool.
What are your favorite topics to make zines about?
Most of my zines are actually like compilations of my sketchbook drawings. Sometimes they're like themed, like there's one I did called Keep Going, which was really just a way to put my sketchbook drawings in a zine. And I really had a loose concept of Keep Going that I used to tie them all together. So that's like most of my zines are just sketchbook compilations. But then my favorite zines are the ones that have like a cohesive concept behind them. My two favorite zines are that I made. One is called Exercise the Demon, and it's about Richard Simmons and Gene Simmons. Richard Simmons is the exercise guru from the 70s, 80s, 90s. Gene Simmons is the bassist from Kiss. And I just like wrote that one day in my sketchbook. I was like, okay, I got to turn this into a zine one day. And when I did, it was like, I don't know, I took like a month off to make that project. I just knew like it was for MochaFest and I bought a risograph machine to make that zine because I just knew like I needed to have a risograph machine at that point. It was 2014. And every festival I kept going to, I was like, what is that? What was that printed on? What was that printed on? And they were like, risograph, risograph, risograph. So a risograph is like a copy machine, but it acts almost like a screen printing setup. So I bought a risograph and then I just put everything I had into making that zine as good as it could be. Through doing that project, I literally like learned how to be an illustrator, I think. I learned how to color my drawings. I learned what I liked to draw. Like, I knew that I liked to just draw my characters in my sketchbook, but in terms of having a concept and trying to like illustrate a specific idea, I think I learned how to do that fully through that project. And then another zine that I made was, that I really love, is called Conceptual Bar Mitzvah Video. It's like a interpretation of a bar mitzvah video from the 80s and 90s. So they all pretty much followed the same format. If you've ever seen a bar mitzvah video from that era, every bar mitzvah video was the same pretty much. It was like the intro with this weird 80s, 90s video company graphics, and then like some montage of childhood photos with some cheesy music. And then like, you know, at the temple and then the party. So I literally had written conceptual bar mitzvah video in a sketchbook once. I don't know how I came up with the name, but then I was just like, that's a project. I got to make that. Between pop culture, personal experiences, and sketchbook compilations, that's like the spectrum of zine subject matter that I make.
Before I say anything, I'm going to show you what I just had to run and interrupt you to grab. Okay. But I think it's going to be worth it. Sorry again.
No worries. Oh, nice.
Gene Simmons duck. Yeah, it is a Gene. I don't know if you know this, but my parents love the Grateful Dead.
Okay.
They're like deadheads. They went to Oregon back in the day to see the dead. There's like 17 pieces of Grateful Dead memorabilia in my living room. I've counted. And so when I was
growing up, that's a zine right there.
You're so right. When I was in middle school and I was tired of listening to the SiriusXM Grateful Dead channel, I said, I got to get it. Like, what is the opposite of the Grateful Dead? And that's how I became a Kiss super fan for like a year or two. Yeah, I've seen them like three times, and one was amazing. Recent. Yeah. Also, just wanted to say that I actually met you when I bought Conceptual Bar Mitzvah Video from you.
Okay.
And I was like, wow, this is a really shared experience.
Was that at CAB?
I think it was at CAB.
Okay.
And from that day on, I was like, I got to take this guy's class. But yeah, it was, I think that, I say this a little in the intro, which you'll hear, but I think it was my first, or one of my first exposures to comics and like storytelling that wasn't so formal.
Yeah.
Like I used the example of Marvel comics and how like those are cool, but they're not my thing. And I was always kind of turned off by the super strict structure of them. And I think I bought that zine when I was right at the beginning of Pratt, like a freshman or a sophomore, and I was like, whoa. So yeah, thanks.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, with the talking about that, like, I think that's why I leaned towards making zines, was because I loved the comics world, like, it's like the indie comics world. I also like grew up on Marvel Comics, but I am not a good writer. And if you ever made a comic, you'll quickly realize that comics are 50% writing and 50% visuals, like art, you know? So I made my own, like my, I made a comic. It was like a compilation of, it was like various short stories called Paper Champion. And when I made it, it was like super difficult for me to make. And at the end, I just realized like that I wanted to make these books, but I didn't want to rely, I didn't want them to like succeed or fail on the writing. You know, I didn't want the bad writing or my perception of writing not being good enough to what I wanted it to be. I didn't want that to bring the book down. So I figured out a way to like, for myself, to explore subjects in the zine format that wasn't a like straight narrative, you know? It was like more an exploration and like juxtaposing things. And that's what I love about zines. There's no rules. It's like, you can just do whatever you want.
So before, in another episode, we were talking about like how zines really like rely on that community of like CAB and like all the other like Mocha Fest, like all the art book fairs, is like a way to like distribute them, and like it builds like that community. So do you think we can like have zines without that physical community? And like, do you miss the physical zine community like during this pandemic?
Yes.
Oh wait, sorry. I want to give a caveat too. Sure. Even complicate things, which is, in a lot of ways, I feel like zines are about, like, even beyond the festivals, the zine itself is about distribution and having people read your zine in large part, or you can argue with that definition, but it just feels kind of different to make a zine and then, you know, just sell it in your web store versus, like, doing more of a proper or, like, accessible release, so just to complicate things.
No, I totally agree. I think that that culture component is a huge element of making zines. I know, I would say probably every zine I've ever made, it exists because I had signed up for the festival to like, it was like a forcing function to make it. Yeah, it definitely complicates everything. But this is, to me, this is temporary. And we will be back to that, you know, to that world of getting together and, you know, being able to like share our work with one another. And, you know, a zine is also, it's also just one way that your work can live and like to get it out there. Now it's like, especially now, it's so easy with the internet to, you know, if you want to do like an ongoing comic, like, you know, post the panels every day on Instagram, like Simon Hanselman is doing with the Meg and Mog characters, like that's like a form of distribution. And my advice would be to make a zine anyway, and it will get to people in the future. Like you'll be able to table in the future, sell it online, give it to friends, promote it on your Instagram, whatever, but don't let the festival or like, you know, that whole community aspect limit you from, if you have an idea for a zine project, you should make it, you know? And especially like, we're talking about like freelancing earlier. Now, like I think most art directors find people through Instagram, to be honest with you. So like sending promo pieces, sending promo postcards, sending, you know, like a physical package to a newspaper or a magazine's office. Like people are working from home, so that's harder. But, you know, if you wanted to get in touch with an art director and be like, I'd love to send you one of my...
Oh no, we lost Greg for a sec.
Hey, I'm
Okay, here. Yes, we lost you for a sec. So sorry about that.
Yeah, sorry about that.
And then I was like, where's the chat?
Said my connection was unstable for a minute.
Ugh, I'm sorry you were sorry to your connection.
Yeah.
But you were saying DM an art director. Slide into an art director's DM.
Yeah, message them, you know. I'm sure they would love to get your cool zine, and it shouldn't be a limiting factor. If you want to make some random handmade books that don't make any sense to make in terms of like financial return or anything, there it's really like you make them because you just feel like you have to. Though that was for a long time for me, the zine format was the way that I could make a personal project. I it was still early for me, like sharing my work on the internet. Like I just wasn't fully comfortable doing that. I didn't really know how to do that. I don't think I still know how to do that. But yeah, it was just like a way for me to make personal projects. Whenever I had an idea for a personal project, it just immediately went to a zine format just because I was in that world. But I would say just make whatever the idea is, make it. And then if it should be a zine later on, then you can turn it into a zine a few years down the road, 2 years down the road when you sign up for a festival if you want. But if you have an idea for a series, like if I had that bar mitzvah idea as a series of images, nowadays, like I'd probably do it as an Instagram series. And then once I had like 24 images or something, I would package it up as a zine when I wanted to, you know, make something, like make a product for my store or something.
We wanted to talk about the zine market, because that feels like sometimes a very connected part of zines, but a totally different thing, like where making zines is no rules and inclusive and
right.
fun and like no pressure or like less pressure. The zine market is kind of the opposite sometimes.
What do you mean by the zine market?
I guess I mean we've been rejected from a lot of folks there. If I'm going to be honest.
Three or four.
Yeah, that sounds like a lot though. I don't know. I remember we took Sketchbook Warehouse, full disclosure,
right.
that I'm disclosing very late. And, you know, I remember often you were like, just apply to as many as you can, whatever.
Right.
A lot of them just have weird like bars for entry. Like
right.
a lot of them are just the same people or people's friends. For me, at least, not going to speak for you, Olive. It's easy to feel like a little bitter or rejected by the market.
Yeah.
Which then we were like, maybe the zine market is oversaturated. because also Rezo has been... Like, Rezo and zines are, like, the handshaking meme. They're best friends. A lot of people have Rezos now or access to Rezos and are making zines. You know, with that, there's maybe less spots.
Yeah.
A lot of the stuff at New York Art Book Fair, we said, looked... Like, as we've kept going for the past few years, like... And this is, like, a very small sample size. I don't really feel like this is true for, like, CAB or something. Or, like, other more independent fairs. But at, like... New York Art Book Fair, for example, a lot of the zines started looking the same, like they were printed using the same techniques about the same topics.
Right.
And stuff.
Yeah, I feel similarly, like, you know, I feel like at least my work can be kind of weird sometimes, and I feel like if people are looking at it to let us into art book fairs, you know, it's like, they like, you know, certain things.
Right, yeah.
In the market, as we
say. Yeah. So that's a different thing. Those are gatekeepers to the festivals. But the zine making has no gatekeepers. So that's like what I would say is, because I've been rejected to festivals as well. There are certain ones that are like invite only. Like I remember CAB in the beginning was invite only. And it was because it was in a small gym and it was like, really packed, and I definitely felt like, you know, like there was two people that were in charge of who were going to be in that festival, and if they liked you or not, you know, determine whether you, or if they liked your work, and it's their taste, you know. But over, I know over time they expanded it. When I got into that festival, I was like really, really excited and happy and relieved. But I think I got in once I had enough of like a backlog of stuff made, and that I was like showing that I was active in that world. I will say that MochaFest is the most, I guess, open to a variety of people, from people just starting out to very established people. And that's why it's my favorite festival, because you have like students, you have people sharing tables that, you know, they're just starting out. They're just like me. In 2012, I was just starting, and I shared a table with my friend, and it felt like I was given a chance. And it's always, I haven't been in a few years, but it always felt like that to me, MochaFest. SPX is like super hard to get into. It's like a lottery system. TCAF, I have only done once. And I know that is like its own thing with like very specific, I don't know what they're looking for, really. I got in once, and that can definitely be a bummer, to like a feeling of like rejected from that world, and you're not able to, like a feeling of like you're not able to participate. I would say that the way to overcome that is to make them anyway, and to like be like, it's kind of like you just have to be undeniable in a way of just like, look, I'm making them regardless of whether I'm tabling or not. And there's something that happens when people see that you are making things regardless. Like, if you have like a library, if you have like a stack of like 5 zines that you made, and you've never tabled at a festival before, but you're like getting it, you're taking it to like Desert Island, or you're like sending a few copies to the independent comic shops around the country that have, you know, zine shelves. And you're just active. You're like, I made a new zine, and it's like on Instagram. And I think they do ask when you're applying to see like, oh, let's see some examples of your work. Like, what are some past zines you might have made, or what's your shop? What are you planning on publishing in the future? That is an element that goes into the decision when they're tabling. Regarding everything looking the same and there being like so much out there, I will say like I completely agree. Risograph definitely flattened in a way like what things look like, because it's such a limited, only so many things that it can do, and people really gravitated towards it. And I think I towards the end of, before I moved to New York, I was starting to feel like a little bit of like, what's next on the horizon. I sold my Risograph before moving to Atlanta, and I think I was just a little bit tired of every project that I had, every personal project that I wanted to make, it going through the lens of a Risograph machine. It was like, this is gonna be a print, this is gonna be a zine, this is gonna be a print, this is gonna be a zine. And I just wanted to see like, what else could I make? And I think I got like a little stuck in a loop. So, you know, maybe this time, like a break from shows and stuff is a good, it's a good thing. You know, gives everyone a time to reset. And yeah, I think regardless of the trends, this format, zines, it's going to be around for as long as people can print, and as long as there's paper and some kind of printing method. That feeling of maybe like being kept out of the community of zine makers, it's a bummer, but it shouldn't stop you from making zines if that's what you want to do. The best way, if that's something that's happening, besides just making them regardless and just being like undeniable, like, you're not having me tabling at your festivals, I'm going to make 100 zines, and you're going to like 100 different zines, and just be like you'll eat your words kind of thing. I would say collaborate with people. So, you know, publish a compilation, multiple people, like your friends, your peers, and just experiment with self-publishing and getting it out to people. That's what these people, they have a tough job because there's only so many spots. These places are not gigantic, you know. It's like there's a limited number of tables and there's more and more people doing it than ever. It's the same thing as illustration. There's more people doing illustration now than ever before because the tools are more available and it's really competitive. It's hard to get jobs. So I think with a lot of this, it's kind of like doing it regardless. Like if I were to make my zine and be like, try to like make it make financial sense or business sense or time sense, schedule sense, none of it makes sense. I just had to do it, you know? So that's the mentality that you should have. It's like, whether I'm tabling or not, I have to make this and then make it.
That was good.
Yeah.
I also don't mean to be like, zine fairs suck. I hate them much. Like, I drop so much money at them.
Yeah.
Like, I love zines. I realized I did come off a little hatery.
But no. I think it's valid. It's totally valid. I've felt it before, too. It's like,
yeah. I'm just so anti-accessibility. and you do forget, like, sometimes, especially when you're rejected personally.
Yeah.
You do forget things like there are spatial constraints and like you can kind of empathize with someone making a decision when you really think about it. But when you're just like, they reject me, like they fucking rejected all my friends, they reject everyone. It just compounds, which is maybe why it came on a little strong right there.
No, I completely agree. It's a weird thing. And I kept applying to CAB, and I would just, there's like festivals everywhere, you know. There's festivals like, there's Cake in Chicago. Have you heard of Cake?
What does Cake stand for, Greg?
Chicago
Art. Comic. Just kidding.
I don't know. I actually don't know.
Comic Excellence.
Alternative Comics Expo, maybe? I don't know. I have to look at it. But yeah, Cake in Chicago is one. I did that. Yeah, I never did the art book fair, the printed matter art book fair. I never did that. I actually went there once. And because I wasn't tabling at it, I felt like almost like uncomfortable there. Like, oh,
vibes are off there. That is the most, like, the weirdest power dynamic one by far, where it's like, that's them and this is us and we're, they're in power and they're selected. That's just why it sucks, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, because zines are the opposite.
Yeah, exactly. I've also done, like, or gone to fairs that were just, like, you know, someone, like, set up in a studio, like an open studio situation. And there was like 20 tables, you know, on a Saturday. And it's like someone put on their own zine fair, you know? And it wasn't like the event of Comic Arts of Brooklyn or Mocha Fest, but it was like, you know what? We're just gonna do our own thing. And I think it all comes from that same place. It's like punk rock. Yeah, the clubs that maybe we're like booking bands. It's like you couldn't get booked in those clubs. And you're just like, you know what? We're going to stop playing music. We're going to make our own scene, you know? That's how new scenes emerge. That's how Comic Arts Brooklyn emerges. That's how these things happen, is that there are gatekeepers. It's open in the beginning and then it's more and more competitive and then it's harder to get in and then it becomes its own little insular thing. And then new scenes come out of that, you know, like whether it's independent filmmaking, you know, it all comes from that same place. It's like, we still have to make it. We still want to get it to people. So we're just going to do it ourselves. So it's kind of like all comes back to that in the end. Still make it. Still play your shows. Still make your music. Still make your movies. And then now, again, it doesn't have to be a zine. A zine is not the like limiting factor of making an idea happen. So there's so many ways to get your idea out to people. So make it, and the important thing is making it.
Yeah. Two points I just want to sum up, because I feel like they were really good that you made, and I just want to bring them back. One is, I think we can all agree, just do it your fucking self. If you can't get, like, that's the best.
Yeah.
And that's like the truest. So
That's what it's all about.
Yeah.
That's like, that's where all the good stuff happens as like an independent artist. It's like everyone, even the people that are like established that are like published by publishers, you know, like have book deals, they started by making their own stuff. You know, they put their money on the line and there's like, I want to make a magazine about this subject. I'm going to just, you know, pay my friends to like write articles. I'll pay them like $50 for a little like story and, you know, just make these things. That's where you learn. That's where you get better and you start to make progress in your life as an artist. You know, you're making projects, personal projects. That's like the, whether it's a zine or whatever, it has to be just a personal project that you make. And I think that was like a big part of Sketchbook Warehouse. I was trying to just encourage people to just make their work, you know, like I really rejected, or I was trying to make a place that was open to do what you wanted to do rather than being like, no, this is what a good drawing is. Like, this is how your sketchbook should look. Like, this is how you paint or collage. I just wanted to like, no, show me what you do. Like, why are you here? Why are you in art school? Like, show me what you do. Are you into drawing cats? Like, show me your cat drawings. I want to see like sketchbooks filled with cats. So yeah, that was just do what you want. And that's where you figure out what you're all about as an artist.
Yes. Absolutely. And the second point from my 2 points, which totally leads into it. Right before we go to the last questions, let me sneak one in there. Which is, if it's not a zine, like, it's totally cool. And if it is a zine, but then, like, tomorrow it isn't a zine, that's cool, too. Wait, that didn't make sense. Because I forgot part of it. If it's not a zine for you, like, that's okay. You just have to do what you feel like you have to do. And that'll change, I think. I think I've been freaked out before, personally, when that has changed. You know, I've been like, but it's always been like, especially in this pandemic, I haven't really been able to make zines personally, just for whatever reason, or really draw much before right now. Because I realized like a lot of my drawings are based on like things that happen to me in the outside world.
Right.
And then I was really freaking out because I was like, I'm not making zines, but I always make zines and I always keep a sketchbook. Like, what the hell's wrong with me?
Right.
But yeah, if it's not a zine, if that's like, just make what you feel like you need to make. And it's okay if it changes, whatever that media is. But the important thing is that you made it.
Yeah.
As Greg said.
Yep. That's...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It reminds me of... I think you told our Sketchbook Warehouse class this was the only way you could fail at, like, your practice and, like, your art is if you stop making art.
Yeah.
And that's like, that has stayed with me since that class. And it's true. It's like the only way you can like fail at art is if you don't, you know, if you quit like making any. Of course, everybody has to like take breaks. And, you know, sometimes, like Basha said, like I do a lot of drawing for work. So right now I'm like trying to do more felting as like my outlet. But the only way you can fail is if you willingly stop. But since we have you here and you're the sketchbook guy, would you like to talk about sketchbooks?
Yeah, I loved. I mean, I can talk for hours about sketchbooks, but yeah, I mean, sketchbooks for me, that was my connection to zines too. It was like just constantly drawing in my sketchbook. I actually never kept sketchbooks in high school, or middle school, or any. I never like really had a sketchbook since I was like a kid. But I was always doodling on my notes, like in high school or on my folders. Like I think I still have my high school folders that are just like covered in drawings. And that was what I just did during note-taking and during like lectures and stuff. I would just draw constantly in my sketchbook. And yeah, I wanted to be an animator when I was a kid. So like I was always drawn to like cartoony characters, and it was just something that I always did. And then once I started in college, once I found graphic design and then found like art as my path, like that I committed to art being my path, because it was always just something I did for fun, like just doodling. I never thought I could make a career out of it. Once I was in the art program and then I like dove deep into art and like was exposed to like Juxtapose magazine and that whole, you know, lowbrow art world, it like sparked all this creativity and inspiration in me, because I was like, oh, they're making like figurative, weird, cartoony, you know, disturbing creatures. And I just felt, and it's like art, quote unquote, like, you know, they're in galleries and stuff. So I just started drawing heavily again and really just started creating a sketchbook practice. And I just was like inseparable from my sketchbook. And I felt like I really learned how to draw through, like, you know, it's the cliche 10,000 hours, like just obsessively drawing all the time. I definitely go through periods where I'm not like that person who's like at dinner with people and has their sketchbook and is just like silent in the corner. That's not me. I go through periods where I'm not drawing a lot. Like I'm usually drawing for work, but you know, the personal day-to-day sketchbook practice, it's not something that's like consistent. There are times where I like away from it for a while and then I pick it back up and it's like I suddenly, like, I feel like I forgot how to draw. And it takes me like maybe an hour or two until I'm like back in that mode of like, okay, you know, don't worry. Like it comes back. And that's to me is, the best thing about a sketchbook is that's where you figure out yourself as an artist, to me. I mean, you can figure it out through projects. For some people, yeah, like having projects, whether it's a personal project or a client project, each one they discover something new about themselves and their work. But I had to figure it out through my sketchbook. And coming from a graphic design background, I did not study illustration. I did not know how to be an illustrator. I didn't even realize it was its own industry that had its own rules and gatekeepers and ins and outs. I figured that out once I quit my job and I was like, oh, I have to have a portfolio. Like I can't just like show them my sketchbook. So yeah, but I've made my portfolio through my sketchbook. It was how I figured out how to be an illustrator. It's how I found my voice. And yeah, it's something that every single project that I do to this day, finds its way through my sketchbook. I have a really hard time with Procreate and the iPad and like digital, like purely digital art making from beginning to end. It feels very forced to me. Maybe it's because I'm like old now, but there's just something about like that book. I love it. You can go back to it. You can see where you were mentally. I can look back at where I was at the beginning of my illustration journey and see like, what were my struggles? What were the things that I'm still dealing with now, you know, things that I'm still trying to work on and improve. and then also see like my progress, like where I started and where I'm at now. And yeah, to me, it's just so cool. Like, it's such a cool thing to just, to draw in general, to just have images appear out of nowhere, you know? And when I'm drawing, I go into like another place, and it's like after I draw, I look at the drawings, I'm like, I don't really remember how I did that. It's just like, it's like muscle memory or something, you know? So that's what sketchbooks are for me. It's everything for me.
I agree about like the purely digital things. There's just something to me about the disconnect between, even if it's like, I have an iPad now and I'm like, I'm drawing directly on an iPad. It's still like a piece of glass between me and the drawing. Whereas like in the sketchbook, it's like
there.
It's right there. Yeah.
You can't zoom in and you can't. Yeah.
The zoom is weird. I make the weirdest stuff on like digital.
I'm envious of people that have figured it out for themselves.
Oh, like, yeah.
Mm. You know, I think it's possible. Yeah, it's possible for all of us to figure it out. I think you just have to kind of commit to like I'm using this as my main.
Yeah. Tool. You got to do your 1,000 hours.
Yeah.
You'll get over the hump of it looking like not what you like, you know, like this doesn't look like my work, you know, that's how it feels in the beginning. But I'm sure at some point you get over the hump and you find your tools and your brushes and your workflow. And it's like anything else, it becomes a tool. So
I feel like we're at a good place. We have a lot of super good advice. Thanks, Greg.
Yeah. Thank you for coming to chat with us.
Is there anything you want to leave us with? And if you want to just shout out something in your life, it could be a piece of art, it could be a food, it could be your daughter, anything, no pressure, but just something you've really loved and enjoyed lately. And it could be more than one thing. I think that would be a fun way to end.
Well, it was awesome to be here. Thank you for having me. I love talking about this stuff, and I don't get to talk about it often because like illustrators work solo, you know? My biggest, you asked for like maybe a advice and then something like that I've loved.
Just something like you want to leave the
parting thought.
The heads with, the listeners.
Well, I'll do a two-parter. I will say, you know, if you're just starting out, that's how we started this talk. If you're just starting out, you have so much time. A lot of young people feel like they're out of time or like running out of time. And that like time is slipping away and that they're falling behind. You have so much time. Like I am turning 37 and like I feel old, but I remember like when I was 27 and that's when I quit my job to become an illustrator and I felt old. And I was like young, I was like a baby, you know? I was just in the beginning of figuring everything out. And just be generous with yourself to just do what you need to do to like survive and make your work. And if you want to take breaks, take breaks, take care of your health. This is not like a race. No one is like waiting for you to make the next thing. Do what you got to do. Enjoy your life. And if you want to make art and have fun. Try to remember to have fun doing it, because that's why you went to art school, if you went to art school, or that's why you draw, if you draw, because it's something you liked. It was fun. So try not to lose the fun aspect of it. And if it becomes unfun, try to find the fun again. Okay. And then one thing that I love right now, besides my daughter, of course, and my wife, of course, and just every day, that's the best. They're the best. I'll share two things. Marvel movies. I love Marvel movies so much. There was a trailer for it was like Marvel coming back to the movies, like Marvel's gonna save the movies, like, well, come back to the movies, you know? And it was like a promo for like all the upcoming movies that they had in the next few years. And I like literally cried watching it. I was just so happy. I was like, I couldn't believe what they were. They like dropped new footage of the Eternals movie in that little 3-minute video. And I was like, I love Marvel Studios so much. Those movies, I've been watching them for 13 years and I love them. Like, it's an understatement to say I love them. I love these movies so much. I'm so happy they exist, and the TV shows now, Disney Plus. So that, and I'll also share a YouTuber that I really like. So I just started a YouTube channel and it's a whole new world for me. It's I'm learning video. I'm like I'm a baby again. I'm like feeling like, what am I doing? I don't know what's happening. I feel like amateur hour, but that's the life of an artist. That's the life of a creative person. You're just constantly trying new things and you don't know what you're doing. But he's a doctor from the UK and he's a YouTuber. His name is Ali Abdaal, A-L-I-A-B-D-A-A-L. And this guy's YouTube channel is like one of my favorite things I've discovered in the past few months. So great. It's like one of those productivity kind of YouTubers. But I've just like learned so many things from watching his videos. So I really recommend those videos to you. And another YouTuber and / Twitch guy named Healthy Gamer. He's a doctor. He's a Harvard psychologist and he has a channel called Healthy Gamer. And he talks to Twitch streamers and it reminds me of being in therapy. He talks like, it's like real talk with these people. And he shares so much good advice. I really love this channel, Healthy Gamer. So Healthy Gamer, Ali Abdaal, Marvel movies. That's it.
Thanks, Greg.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah,
that was great.
If you want to find Greg on the internet, you can find all of his work at gregkletsel.com. That's GREGKLETSEL.com. On Instagram at Greg Kletsel. On Twitter at Greg Kletsel. And you guessed it, on YouTube, Greg Kletsel. Highly recommend his YouTube channel.
Cold Email is a very professional podcast about being early career creatives and all the trials, tribulations, and good times that come with it. Recorded, written, and performed by Basha Kurlander and Olive Lagaze. Edited by Basha Kurlander. Follow us on Instagram at cold.email and check out our website, cold-email.tumblr.com. Email us at coldemail1000@gmail.com with any questions you want us to answer on the show, suggestions for future themes, or to inquire about guest starring in an episode. Music by Basha Kurlander, aka Marbly. As always, thanks for listening.
And I love that it's still light out by you, and it's 8:40. I'm sorry, I couldn't stop looking at it. I'm like, holy shit. When you get to June, it's going to be like 11.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, I realized, like, because I grew up in Florida, and it was hot all the time.
That was my first time at the Javits Center, I think. And then at the end, I was like, fuck it.
No.
Because I'm not using it at Penn Station.
Would you rather use the bathroom at Penn Station on the day of Comic-Con when it's still flooded with cosplayers or use the bathroom at the Javits Center during Comic-Con? You don't have to answer that one.
I think it's probably cleaner at Javits Center, honestly, even though those... Yeah, I'm gonna leave it there.
Yeah.